It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, May 17th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, global warming activist, founder of Kids versus Global Warming, Alec Lures, will be joining us today to discuss I Matter March. The I Matter March. Also on the program today, great news. You'll remember back on April 4th of this year, we spoke to attorney Bruce Affron. He was representing seven activists and journalists in attempting to get an enjoyment, I guess, an enjoyment of the NDAA, specifically the Homeland Battlefield Provision. That ruling was issued yesterday, and they won. We will cover that in detail. Also, class action case will go forward in the stop and frisk policy in New York City. And I hear $2 billion. Do I hear $2.5 billion? $2.5 billion. Do I hear $3 billion? $3 billion. $3 billion, yes. Man in the suit. JP Morgan losses now $3 billion. It's just one more billion. That and more, the TED Talk people. Apparently, it's just too controversial to say that wealthy people aren't job creators. Why the TED Talk people are just so horrible. That and more today. Before we go to our interview and before we cover any stories today, I just want to say a couple of brief words. Many of you know that I do a weekend radio show with Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy's family has suffered another tragedy yesterday. Mary Kennedy has passed. She, Bobby, and I don't know really, frankly, many details of it. I've never met Mary. I know Bobby through work and through Air America. I do know they have four kids, and I know that Mary and Bobby were going through a divorce. And I know this is also just a family that she would was involved in some great public advocacy, as Bobby is, And I know this is a family where there are sort of pressures that I think that, frankly, I don't know that I can fully grasp. But she died yesterday, and, you know, my heart goes out to their four kids and to her friends and family. And I just wanted to mention it because it's a real it's tragedy. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Alec Lures. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You know, it's the internet's leading provider of audiobooks. With more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers, you, as a listener of the Majority Report, are eligible for a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Go and pick up The Republican Brain, The Science of Why They Deny Science and the Reality by Chris Mooney. We interviewed him on it a while back. Perfect book for today. You can get a free version at audiblepodcast.com/majority report, or you can pick any one of their hundreds of thousands of titles. Do it now. It's free. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. As you may or may not know, ladies and gentlemen, the trailing 12 months have been the warmest 12 months in the past 117 years in the United States. And I say only in the past 117 years because that's only as far back as we measured it. We started measuring these things back in 1895. So there has never been a more warm 12 months in the history of the United States. I don't know if that is all attributable to global warming. There are many factors, but we've certainly had over the past couple of years some of the warmest years in the history of the country. And we also know the preponderance of science on this is that the entire globe is warming. And apparently, well, and this is not just a problem for people our age. It's a bigger problem for people the age of our next guest. On the phone, Alec Lures. He is the founder of Kids Versus Global Warming and also the founder of the I Matter March. Welcome to the program, Alec.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Alec, how old were you when you started Kids Versus Global Warming?
I was 12, I guess.
That's fantastic. I just can't tell you how happy I am to talk to you, knowing that at least there are some people who are forward looking, and of course, you know, then there are kids who are that just motivated and ambitious. Why did you start it?
Yeah, well. I guess the first spark for me was seeing Al Gore's So Many Through the Truth, and I just that was the first I'd ever heard of climate change or global warming or environmental issues or really anything like that. And it just kind of hit me at a deep level. Like, I felt this sort of spark, just this sense of calling that I never really felt before. And I decided I wanted to do something about it, but I had no idea what I could do. And I actually got in a huge argument with my best friend that next day at school. He was kind of going into all the, you know, Fox News stuff and saying, you know, this is just a natural cycle and Al Gore is crazy and all that sort of stuff. And that just kind of made me angry. And I went home and I started doing all this research, and I found these scientific reports and all these articles online. And I put together this little presentation basically just to prove my friend wrong. But it was when I was doing that research and when I was, learning all about this, that I realized this is serious, this is huge, and it's bigger than just this one little argument with my friend. And then after that point, I just kind of decided this is what I want to do. This is kind of what I feel called to focus on. So I decided that I wanted to teach my peers about these issues because I realized, you know, it's our generation that's going to have to grow up and deal with climate change, and more than anyone else, we're going to have to face the consequences of the decisions that our society makes today. And so I feel that because of that, we kind of have the power to bring this issue into the forefront and actually lead the way to creating a sustainable and just society that really does live as if our future matters. That's really what this is about. It's more than just specifically climate change or carbon or Al Gore. It's about, you know, we're living in a way that doesn't appreciate the needs of anything other than money and power. And we view the earth only as just a resource to conquer and just like something that belongs to us that we have every right to destroy. And like, I believe if we want to solve climate change, that's what we need to change. And that's been my message with that has been kind of transitioning. But going back to that, to the beginning, I just decided I wanted to give presentations and, to make a long story short, I applied to be trained by Al Gore, but was turned down because I was 12. And then I just kind of did it on my own and started getting invited to all these events and eventually did get to meet Gore, and he did invite me to be trained. And it just sort of continued to grow from there. And I've now spoken to almost 500,000 people now. And we organized this huge event last year called the I Matter March, where youth from over 200 communities in more than 45 countries march in the streets to raise their voices about climate change. And then the big thing this year has been this lawsuit against the federal government. So
yeah, I want to get to that because that's obviously incredibly interesting, and you have an open letter to President Obama as well on your blog. I guess that's the I Matter March. .org, is it?
Yeah, it is.
But before we get there, I want to just, you know, you want to back up a little bit more, because this is really just an amazing, you know, I want to talk about obviously the topic that you're advocating for, but it's also sort of just an amazing story. And so tell us a little bit about, were your parents activists? Did you get this from your parents, or was it something that was sort of just you were freelancing? And if you were just completely freelancing, I want to know what your parents fed you as a child.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a good question. I really hadn't been raised thinking about these issues really much at all. I mean, we sort of like recycle sometimes, and but that was kind of as far as we took it, and it wasn't really just a part of our household at all. But
how did you come to see the movie?
Yeah, that's my mom did decide she got the movie on DVD, and she decided she thought that I would enjoy it. And at first I was actually really resistant to watching it at first. I thought it was like going to be a boring documentary about volcanoes or something. But then I remembered that I love boring documentaries about volcanoes and stuff. So I just kind of watched it and I was just completely blown away.
How did your parents react were they sort of conscious of the fact that you had this argument with your friend and that you were doing this research? I mean, at one point, mm-hmm. did they say, like, hey, Alec, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, well, my mom has always been extremely supportive from the very beginning, and more than just supportive. I mean, she now works on this, works for I Matter and Kids vs. Global Warming full-time. And she's a single mom. My parents are divorced, so she's basically, our whole family has become devoted to this. But my mom is really the reason I am where I am, because I've kind of given all these presentations and done all this stuff and been committed to this work for these 5 years, and then my mom has always been just kind of at my side, just as a coworker and a friend and a mom. But now the setup is sort of like she basically runs most of the, like, actual organizational stuff that I have no idea how to do, and then I do these speeches and presentations and kind of be sort of the voice. And it's definitely transitioning, because I'm turning 18 this month and going off to college in the fall and going through some regular transition stuff with that. But I feel really fortunate to be able to work with my mom and have the support of that I've had.
Yeah.
And I think it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, when you went to the training, the environmental training that Al Gore's Institute offers, did you show up there? Were they sort of were people sort of impressed with the level of knowledge that you had about the issue at that point?
I remember when I first met him, that was like, it had seriously been like my number one life dream calling, whatever, to be part of that training and to, like, have his actual slides and, like, be able to actually go through that. Because I had basically, up until that point, I had just sort of made it on my own, like, from scratch. But I had sort of copied a lot of what I had seen in his movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I remember when I first got the DVD with all of his, 500, 1,000 slides, I was just like, I couldn't even handle. Like, the second the event was over, I ran out to the room and to my computer in the hotel room and, like, immediately just started going through these slides. And, like, it's hard to remember. I think the people were definitely impressed when I was there. I mean, when I first met Gore, I met him at this event in San Diego, and I actually got, like, 2 minutes to talk to him, which for him is huge. And then, like, I raised my hand to ask a question after he finished speaking. It was at this event, and he actually, like, brought me up on stage with him to ask the question, and, like, he introduced me to the audience because this was after I had already talked to him, and it was like I just had a heart attack because I was so ecstatic. But at the training, I mean, I remember I had already studied a lot of the stuff, and for me it was more just like being able to actually officially use these slides and stuff. But I had already been a part of this. Doing these presentations and stuff for, I guess, like a year and a half at that point. And so I just kind of, it was cool. And I was actually the youngest trained presenter for a while, because they just kind of sort of had this cutoff of, I think it was 16. And since then they've let in a bunch of people who are younger than that, who are like 14 and 13 and 15 and stuff. So,
when you go around to schools and speak, are you finding how receptive are you? I mean, do you get kids who are emailing you afterwards and want to get involved and sort of following your footsteps, not just sort of to expand their awareness, but to actually sort of involve themselves in expanding other people's awareness?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's been a huge thing. I mean, it's always extremely positive reaction from youth and adults, but mostly from young people, because we did it. I mean, like, I can see it in their eyes. I can see this spark. It's the spark that I felt when I signed in Communion Truth, and it's the spark that I think will change the world. But I found that we, kind of as an entire generation, have this subconscious sense that we're called to change the world. We can feel at a deep level that something's going wrong, and we kind of want to do everything we can to fix it. And some of us don't even realize that. We don't even know that we feel this, but all it takes is just a moment of spark and then we're off. We can't be extinguished. But after presentations, I mean, youth have told me that they never thought they could make a difference. And then I kind of, I mean, show them that, and a bunch of young people have gone off to start projects and be involved in certain things and be connected with iMatter. We're now working on a bunch of some really cool projects to kind of give tools and resources to young people and kind of training to become powerful activists and give presentations like I have and lead marches and write articles and make videos and all that sort of stuff and really engage them. Because in the past, I've always like sort of given these inspiring presentations and youth have always gotten so excited, but we haven't really had the infrastructure or resources to be able to kind of handle that sort of a movement. And it's mostly because of funding. Because we've just sort of devoted ourselves to it and kind of killed ourselves, but without really focusing enough on fundraising. So that's our next big focus, so that we're able to kind of have this infrastructure to be able to handle this movement of activists and be able to give them the resources to really become powerful, advocates for the issue of climate change, but also just any issue that they feel passionate about. Because it's really more than, like I said, it's not just climate change. And every issue that you can be passionate about is connected. You know, we're living in a way that's not right and unsustainable and unjust, and that's what needs to change. So everything is part of that mission.
Yeah. The youth you're talking to, do they get that notion? I mean, you know, you're talking about a fundamental shift in what people value in our society, and it certainly it swings back and forth at different times, but we're certainly living in a period of time where money and the accumulation of things has been an ascendant value. Are you finding that your generation, in some respects, are reevaluating it? Do you have a sense that there is a change amongst them? I mean, obviously, it's hard for you to sort of gauge where they are relative to other generations. But when you approach these kids, are they starting from? Are they already sort of like? Are they changing their perspective, or have they already changed their perspective? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a sort of subtle distinction.
Yeah, definitely.
Give me your sense.
I can totally see that. That's one of the most inspiring things that I think about doing this work is I can, you know, we as young people were kind of like not yet bought into this kind of mindset of just like money and power and convenience and growth and take over everything and win and all that sort of stuff that it kind of has a grip on our society. We're sort of beginning to feel it, and I think we're feeling uneasy about it, and that's why there's so much kind of like depression and problems among people my age, because we're going through this transition into being what society would call adults, but there's not really any recognition of that, and we're kind of being welcomed into this society that's sort of messed up at a deep level. And I think we can feel that. But then just with like climate change and stuff specifically, I mean, like we can feel it from like a moral perspective, and it's not, we don't get caught up in just the money and the financial and the, you know, what's this going to mean for taxes kind of stuff. I've seen that across backgrounds. You know, I story that I love telling, one of the my favorite presentations I've given is I spoke at this high school in this really conservative community in like Orange County, California, and the teachers beforehand were saying I was going to bring political propaganda, and they were all like getting their like Mormon churches involved, and they were going to like picket outside my presentation, which would have been great, but they ended up just chickening out. Then when I arrived at the school, like the teachers were all like just like puffy about the whole thing. At the beginning, the youth were sort of like yelling out things like Al Gore is a liar and like all that sort of stuff.
Who invited you?
I basically framed it. I was there actually with, on behalf of this like energy auditing company. Like I was just working with them and in partnership for a while.
Okay.
And they actually beforehand, they were wanting me to completely take out all mention of climate change at all and just say like, we need to change our, you know, we need to do energy audits because, yeah, to save money and because of foreign oil and like appealing to the values of these people that they already have. I decided to just, I just said no. I mean, I just decided I'm just going to, instead of avoiding it completely, just go above it. So I said, I just basically laid out, you know, here's what's happening with climate change. But honestly, it's not about that. It's bigger than that. It's about, you know, the same thing that I've said. It's about we're living in a way that's not sustainable. And I brought, you know, my definition of sustainability is living as if our future matters. And that's really what this is about. And I just said so that, you know, even without climate change, the impacts of coal and fossil fuels and consumption living in this way is just wrong, and we need to change. And we as youth can change. And after that presentation, it was just like, I mean, they were completely silent by the end. And right when I finished, out of the 750 kids who were at that presentation, over 500 signed up to be part of an action team that day. And like they missed their lunchtime and stood in line to sign up to be part of this team. And they were so, you know, excited. They were ready. And that just shows the power that this kind of message has with young people, because we're not, you know, it seems like among adults, just like the words climate change or that whole concept is just threatening, and it's just difficult to comprehend, and it's just so easy to deny it, and it's just abstract and scientific. But for young people, that's not the case at all. I mean, we can get it. It's our survival that's at stake. It's us who are going to have to, you know, deal with all this stuff. And we really, I feel like we are really some of the most passionate and most dedicated people in the world. And we really have the power to actually change these core values of our society so that we begin to live as if our future matters.
And you're suing the United States government. Is that right?
Yeah, that's
tell us
pretty
about
much.
Tell us about that lawsuit.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm the lead plaintiff in this legal action, this lawsuit against these six agencies of the federal government, starting with the EPA, and it's also the departments of commerce, defense, agriculture, interior, and one other that I always forget. But it's basically these executive agencies on behalf of the entire government, and we're suing them for failing to protect the atmosphere as a public trust for future generations. And it's based on the case is based on this legal approach called atmospheric trust litigation, which is based in the public trust doctrine and commons law, which are just like really really old laws and fundamental in a lot of ways to the U.S. Constitution. And the legal approach basically says that our government has the legal responsibility and obligation to protect nature and the land and the water and the air for future generations. And we're saying that the atmosphere is part of that public trust. And this sort of approach has been used in the past on behalf of, like, specific rivers and certain areas of land, but it's never been used on behalf of the atmosphere as a whole. And we're basically saying that, you know, we seriously need to reduce our emissions because, you know, our generation's at stake. And we're asking, in the case, we're asking for, I mean, there's a couple things. The specific ask is we're asking that our government develop a carbon reduction plan that complies with the research of the world's top climate scientists who are acting as our advisors, headed by Dr. James Hansen from NASA. And their plan basically says that we need to reduce, or their prescription, I should say, we need to reduce carbon emissions by 6% per year starting next year, along with like 100 gigatons of reforestation or sequestration, which I've asked Dr. Hansen how many trees that actually is, but he basically just says a lot. So that's what they say. I mean, that's what's going to, you know, what science says needs to happen if we want to return to safe levels of carbon in our atmosphere and kind of bring it back into balance by the end of this century. That doesn't mean we're going to stop global warming, because it's already started, but that will bring it back into balance before it's completely too late. And so that's kind of what specifically we're asking for, but I think it goes beyond that, because we're really basically asking the government to begin to value nature and the atmosphere just as much as profits and power. And that's been kind of a huge issue, and we've gotten a bunch of pushback because of that. Like last month, the National Association of Manufacturers and these five other huge like industry and fossil fuel lobbying groups basically intervened in a case to fight us, you know, and join the U.S. government to fight to dismiss our case. And they're saying that they have the right to emit as much as they want, and that they've never been required to reduce emissions before, and that they can basically do whatever they want. And we're basically saying that's not just a moral travesty, but it's actually illegal under this public trust doctrine. So last month they filed a motion to dismiss our case, and then the hearing for that was actually last Friday in D.C. And I was there with a delegation of young people to that, who were all plaintiffs in other cases in their states. And we spent all day Wednesday and most of Thursday in the halls of Congress, you know, lobbying, not really lobbying, but just kind of making this case. And we met with like 15 congressmen and women, which is huge. I mean, we had to split up because there were so many meetings set up and so many people who wanted to talk to us. And they actually took us seriously. It wasn't just a meet and greet. And the entire Congressional Progressive Caucus, which has 78 members, these four representatives of that endorsed a statement of support on behalf of the entire caucus, saying that they stand with the youngest generation over the fossil fuel industry. And then on Thursday, we had a meeting with the White House and kind of made our case to them, saying that we actually met with one of the people was President Obama's youth advisor, who basically works really closely with Obama and advises him about youth stuff. And he agreed that the youth are the moral authority on this issue, and we have the power to kind of break through these barriers of financial and you know, all the politics of this issue and get to what it's really about, which is, you know, our survival.
Right.
And then on Friday was this court hearing. So basically we exercised our rights in all three branches of the government last week.
And when will you hear the ruling on that motion to dismiss?
Yeah, the judge said he's going to issue a written statement sometime in the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. or I guess that was 2 weeks from Friday, so I guess
within a week,
hopefully, yeah. Next week. Yeah.
Has there been, as far as you know, has there been ever an attempt to extend this legal principle of the common trust to the atmosphere? I mean, clearly we have it. You know, it goes up to a certain point, anyways, because the government has rights to sort of curtail the height of buildings, and we certainly have the capacity to regulate the amount of pollutants that are put in the air. Has there been any attempts to make this specific legal claim in the past?
Yeah, it's sort of hard to define, but this specific claim, no, this is the first time. And that's one of the reasons, I think, why it's sort of been difficult, and why they're wanting to dismiss it, because it basically, the way that the legal system works is it's all in comparison with cases like this in the past. So there's like a small handful of cases that are sort of similar. Like there was a Supreme Court case last month, which I don't know the exact specifics of, but it was between American Electric Power and this like environmental law group, and they basically ruled, I think, that the EPA has the right to reduce emissions, or that could have been a different case, but there was a ruling that the EPA, or not the right, has the power, the ability to reduce emissions, and we're kind of holding them accountable to that, to their responsibility to, not just the power to. It hasn't, I mean, the legal theory for this atmospheric trust litigation, it was developed by one of the lawyers working on this case, Professor Mary Wood from the University of Oregon. Not working on this case like as a lawyer, but she's been a huge supporter, and I and the lawyers have been connected with her throughout this, and she she's really kind of an amazing attorney and inspiration. But she's the one who developed this specific case. But the public trust doctrine, just in itself, has been used, you know, dozens and dozens of times, and been successful dozens and dozens of times before to hold corporations accountable to polluting, you know, the land and the water and the air in kind of certain areas. But this is the first time it's being attached to the atmosphere as a whole, so like all of climate change. And I think that's sort of scary because it's never been done before. But even more than that, it's inspiring. And really, if this goes through, it'll seriously make history. And even the fact that it's gotten this far is huge. And even the fact that these huge fossil fuel groups have intervened and are fighting us is to me a huge is awesome, because it's just a sign that they're taking it seriously, and actually, you know,
all right, well,
feel threatened.
It's terribly exciting. Let me ask you just one final question. How much interest do people of your age, and you guys are obviously, you are an activist yourself, and you're dealing with people who want to get more active. How much interest and involvement have you guys had in the Occupy movement?
Oh, yeah. That's a great question. I mean, on one hand, a lot of the youth who are involved are also involved in that. I mean, that's sort of the bare minimum of our thing. I mean, I spent some time at Occupy LA, and a couple events with Occupy DC. But I mean, I think just from like a messaging standpoint, that our message and my personal message too is completely in line with what they're pushing for. And it's almost like we're both pushing for action on different symptoms of the same problem. And this problem of valuing money more than people and thinking of the earth just as a resource and all that sort of stuff that is at the core of all this stuff, and just these corporations wanting to completely take over everything. And we're both fighting for action on the same issue. But there's not really an official partnership.
Right.
I think part of the reason is because there's not really an official group. It's not like there's a leader and a board of directors or anything with that. But we are, one of the people we've been working with closely over the past couple weeks is David Swanson, who, I'm not sure the exact involvement, but he was fundamental in the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been awesome. He was at the hearing, and he wrote a great article about really what the specifics of what sort of went down in the hearing. And if anyone's interested, that's really his website is warisacrime.org.
Right.
And he's been a great support. But I mean, I personally really resonate with the Occupy message in some ways. I mean, there's nothing's perfect, but I really feel just the fact that it's sort of starting to die down now, it seems, but the fact that was so huge and is so huge and is still going on, I think is just a testament to the fact that I really believe that the time that we're in right now is the time that we finally push through. I mean, it seems like within my lifetime, definitely, probably within like the next 5 or 10 years, we are either going to push through and begin and make this transition and start living in a way that understands what it means to be connected with nature and live as if our future matters, and we push into this new way of living. We kind of evolve into this next phase of humanity that where we really understand, we remember what it means to actually to really be human and connect with each other and the world. And that's one option, or everything crashes and it turns into complete disaster, which in some ways, like, that's when people will finally realize what an issue this is, because most people don't care about something until it personally affects them. But if we wait until that happens, it's too late for this issue. So this really feels like such a pivotal time just in history. And I really think that we have the power to make that transition into a new society that really lives as if our future matters. And I believe that youth can lead the way. And I just feel honored to be part of this movement and part of this just a member of the world in this important time. So, well, let's make it happen.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Your site is imattermarch.org. People can get all sorts of information there. Is there any other site that you want to point us to? Is that doing?
Yeah, that's the main one. And also, facebook.com/imattermarch is a bit more updated, and that has a bunch of pictures from the stuff last week and information about how to get involved. And also, if anyone is able, we really need financial support really to make this. To make this movement powerful, and that's something we've always struggled with in the past. But we're really trying to build a movement of young people and show, with this case specifically, that it's not the fossil fuel industry and U.S. government versus these five kids, that it's actually the entire youngest generation and everyone who stands with them. And in order to make that a reality, in order to make these projects powerful that we're planning to train these young people, we need financial support. So if anyone is able to help with that, that would be awesome.
imattermarch.org. Yeah. You can find a big donate button there on that site. And Alec, I really appreciate you taking the time with us. What college are you going to?
I'm going to this little liberal arts college in Canada, actually, called Quest University. It really seems like the best place in the world for me.
Fantastic. Well, Alec, I wish you good luck and a terribly impressive story. And I hope your case succeeds.
Yeah, we'll see. And even if it doesn't, that's definitely not the end.
Exactly. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Alec Lures,
imattermarch.org.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to head into the better half. We've got a lot of stories for you in the better half of the program. I mentioned some of them. We'll go over this NDAA ruling, which we first heard about, at least the case we first heard about in an interview with the attorney representing Chris Hedges, Noam Chomsky, I believe Naomi Wolf. Those are the sort of the well-known journalists, but other activists actually involved in the action. Alexa O'Brien, Kai Wargala, who founded Occupy London, Jennifer Bolin, and others. We'll talk about that. Fascinating case. Very encouraging. Also encouraging that we're going to see that class action with Stop Frisk, JP Morgan. Now they're up to $3 billion. You know, what's $1 billion between friends? Check in tomorrow. Maybe it'll be $4 billion. Maybe it'll be $1 billion a day. Folks, speaking of $1 billion, we do not have a $1 billion level of membership for the Majority Report. We got a Majority Reporter, it's $10 a month. We got a Cedarista for $19 a month. You get swag if you want it. You get to listen to the better half if you want it. And we got a dirty effing hippie, professional leftist. You can become a French member, which is very expensive. A super Marxist, which of course I think is almost the most expensive. The most expensive level of support you can give is to actually become a Sam Cedar. And in that case, you also do have the opportunity to come and host this show. I think we settled on like 49 weeks out of the year you can host the show. I come back from wherever I'm living, probably Mexico, and I give you a 3-week vacation. You move in with my family. You deal with my wife and my kid. Enjoy yourself. You don't have to take that as part of the swag if you don't want, but I'll be happy to give it to you. If you become a super Marxist, I may even consider it. All right, but support the show that way you can. JustCoffee.coop, our Amazon link, merch. An iTunes review would be nice. Donate your account. See you in the better half.